Monteverdi Vespers is an astonishing work, even for modern audiences who are used to hearing all the grand choral works of Verdi, Berlioz, Bach, and others. It's a monumental piece, and its sound can only be described as opulent. What we've just heard was the very opening of the entire Vespers. This was based on music which Monteverdi adapted from his opera Orfeo, which was produced only a few years before he published his Vespers. Here he's using what we might think of as a secular style of music in a religious work, but this is just one of many opposites that he manages somehow to reconcile in this enormous piece. There's the old-style Gregorian chant versus the more modern music of his day. There's a Renaissance style versus the early Baroque. And there's the grandest of public music, such as we just heard, versus the most intimate of solo songs. The piece is an encyclopedia, and it's enormously moving. Of all the many levels on which we can listen to this piece, probably the first thing that attracts our attention is just the sheer sound of it. It calls for considerable forces. There's a chorus, which divides into anywhere between 5 and 10 voice parts, depending on what movement we're in. And that chorus is sometimes separated into 2 different choirs. There are 7 vocal soloists. And then there's the orchestra. Monteverdi's orchestra here is set up somewhat differently from the typical orchestra of later times, the orchestra of Beethoven and Brahms. In that symphony orchestra of later times, the strings are really the largest section of the orchestra, and they form the core of the orchestral sound. And to that sound, a composer might add whatever winds he needed for variety and color. In this orchestra, though, we have 3 equal sections. On the left in this recording are the strings. These are the familiar Baroque string instruments, the members of the violin family, plus the violone, which is the contrabass of the gamba family. On the right, we have the wind section, and these are Renaissance winds, most of the Baroque winds not having yet been developed at this point. There are 3 cornetti, which are the long wooden instruments with finger holes. They have cup-shaped mouthpieces, and their range is about the same as the modern trumpet. There are the 3 sackbuts, which are early trombones. There's a dulcian, which is a predecessor of the bassoon. And then finally, there are 2 Renaissance recorders, which are sometimes small recorders that sound an octave higher for the brightness of color, and sometimes the lower instruments that sound at pitch. Then in the middle is the 3rd section of the orchestra. That one is the continuo section, and they are the ones who fill in the harmony. There are 2 lutes, or chitarroni. There is a harpsichord, and there's an organ. And these instruments are playing the bass line and then improvising the harmonies above it, sometimes adding figuration to it. The next excerpt shows some of this orchestral sound. This is from the sonata, which is the only piece in the whole Vespers that really features the instruments. You'll hear at the beginning some sackbuts, and then you'll hear this alternation and contrasting of 2 solo cornetti against 2 solo violins in rather virtuosic music. The only vocal music in this particular movement is 1 phrase of chant, which the sopranos of the choir sing periodically. Thank you. There's another sound in the Vespers, and that is the sound of the solo movements, the movements for vocal soloists. This next example is the beginning of the motet Duo Seraphim, and in it, two tenors, representing two seraphim, are calling to each other across vast distances of space and proclaiming the glory of God. Eventually, about halfway through the movement, there is a third tenor who joins them when the text starts talking about the Trinity. The two tenors you'll hear in this excerpt are widely separated within the church. We follow this practice in some other movements too, where we separate two parts of the chorus on two sides of the church. We even do it occasionally with instrumental soloists when the music calls for echoes. It's a practice which was done at the time, although we have no specific information about what Monteverdi did in any performances of this piece, and in any case, one would have to adapt one's practice to fit the acoustic of the room one is in. Here, then, is the beginning of Duo Seraphim. Monteverdi published his Vespers in Venice in 1610. We don't know why he published it or wrote the work. We don't have a particular occasion on which we know the piece was played. It could even have been in seeking a job that he was writing this piece. It's dedicated to the Pope, so he could have been looking towards Rome for work. It was published in Venice. He could have been looking towards Venice. At the time he published it, he was still at the ducal court in Mantua. We don't know if he performed it there, but only a few years later, in 1613, he applied for the very prestigious post of Maestro di Cappella at St. Mark's in Venice, and he won the post. And he almost certainly would have performed this work as part of his audition. It would certainly have been one of the great auditions in all history, and it's a shame to have missed it. The title tells us that this is the Vespers of the Blessed Virgin. It's written to celebrate feast days in honor of the Virgin Mary. And there are a number of such feasts in the course of the year. What Monteverdi did was to take texts which all of the major feasts of Mary have in common. So this is a piece which is useful on a number of different days in the year. It has the Psalms, a hymn, and this large 12-movement Magnificat at the end, all of which one would expect in such a Vespers. But to those movements, he added a sonata, which we just heard an excerpt from, and a number of motets, which precede the psalms. These motets are non-liturgical pieces, but it was a frequent practice in Italy at the time to include them. And his Vespers is the first printed work in which we can see them. In this recording, we have added to Monteverdi's music some Gregorian chant, plain chant, antiphons. These are brief chants which complete the liturgy. They give us the text for specific days on which one may be celebrating the Vespers. They're used here to precede the Psalms and the Magnificat, as they would have been in actual practice. Beyond simply completing the liturgy, these chants are meditative moments in the middle of the Vespers. It's a little like having a taste of sorbet to clear the palate between courses of a feast, or listening to the ocean to clear the mind before going again into this very complex music of the Psalms. This next piece is from the Dixit Dominus, one of the psalms, and it shows a number of the features that I've already talked about. It mixes solo music and choral music and orchestral interludes, as well as chants. Throughout much of the Vespers, there's a good deal left unspecified about the orchestration that the conductor must determine, and which will vary from one performance to another. One has to decide in many places whether the orchestra should double the chorus, should play along with them on their parts, and where that should happen. In large choral movements such as this one, one can decide that certain passages should be sung by soloists and chorus should sing others. In some of the ritornelli, the instrumental interludes, such as this next example has, the notes are there, but Monteverdi has not specified what instruments are to play them. And so one can decide how to orchestrate it. In this case, the first ritornello you will hear is played by the strings and the second one by the wind section. So there are two of the three sections of the orchestra being featured separately. This example has several sections, and I'll just explain quickly what they are. There is a chorus in the beginning, and you'll hear at the beginnings of the choral sections the chorus chanting or declaiming text on a single chord. This is called falso bordone. Then there's a ritornello for the strings, followed by two solo sopranos. And while the sopranos are singing their music, underneath it is a bass line of the chant for that text, the old Gregorian chant. And in this case, I've chosen to have that chant line sung by the basses of the chorus rather than a soloist, so that it has a little more weight. There's then another choral section, and then another ritornello, this time played by the wind section. One of the most glorious features of the Vespers to me is in the way Monteverdi has chosen to unify it. Like Bach, who drew his inspiration from the most complex techniques of counterpoint and all the restrictions entailed there, Monteverdi has set himself a forbidding task, which is to build all the major movements, all the psalms, the sonata, the hymn, the Magnificat with all its 12 sections, to build all of these on the Gregorian chant for those texts. And over the chant is a more modern kind of music, which he superimposes upon it. So the chant is a fixed voice, or cantus firmus, which unifies and underlies the music of these sections. We can hear that very clearly in the Magnificat. This is a section, the Fecit Potentiam from the Magnificat, in which the two solo violins are playing this more modern music, if you will, while the altos of the chorus are intoning the chant. This is the very next section in the Magnificat, the De Posuit. You'll hear the same chant as in the last one, although in a different key, and this time it's sung by the tenors. Over at this time, you have first two solo cornetti with a very high, virtuosic part. One of the two cornetti you'll hear is in echo and is placed in this recording way at the back of the church to create the echo. This is something where one has to find the right space, the right spot to create the appropriate echo sound. Then in the second half of the movement, the same effect is repeated with two violins. Again, one of them is in echo. And all the while underneath is the chant of the Magnificat text by the tenors. In the next excerpt, we hear a very complex choral sound, which was written for the reverberant acoustic of a large church. We have a chorus that has 10 voice parts. In fact, it's two separated choruses of 5 voices each. And in this recording, the choruses are quite separated on different sides of the church. The music at the beginning is very, very busy and sounds tremendously complex. But in fact, all this busyness is adding up to large blocks of a single harmony, which then, after a while, changes to another harmony. So it makes a very slow progression. And the blurring that happens in the church acoustic is part of what is considered in this music. It's part of the sound of the busyness in it. It's something that needs to be performed very rhythmically to bring out the changes in the movement in the chorus. After the initial section, you'll hear first one chorus and then the other as they begin to alternate in this piece. That was the beginning of the Nisi Dominus. If you listen to it again, you will hear that the tenors in each of the two choruses are singing longer chant lines, while all the busy music of the other parts is being sung over that. This is just one of the many ways that Monteverdi reconciles the old-style chant with the more so-called modern music of his day. And doing this in the course of all these large choral movements allows him to build an enormous structure over the course of the Vespers, something that goes way beyond anything that we have from any of his contemporaries. Monteverdi's Vespers is an encyclopedic work. It's one in which you could study the techniques forever. But what makes it such an extraordinary work is that all of those techniques are in the service of an enormous emotional power and the breathtaking beauty of this music.